our presenter, Dr. Derica Boykin. Derica, can I turn things over to you?
Yes, thank you so much. And thank you everyone who is attending today's cyber seminar. I'm really excited to share with you some early results from my Career Development Award. And so with that, we'll go ahead and get started. So just to begin, I just want to let everyone know that I have no conflicts of interest and that the views expressed here in the presentation are those of my own and doesn't represent the position or policy of the VA or the government. And just to bring you through a little bit of what to expect today, so I'll be first going over a little bit about community care, not much, but enough to just share with you a little bit about what it kind of encompasses my overall CDA project. I'll present to you one aspect of my CDA project, but also want to give you a sense of the overall vision and inspiration for it. So I want to share a little bit of that with you so you can have context for where this particular qualitative study came from. And then we'll end the presentation with talking about some preliminary themes that we have from that qualitative study, as well as some concluding remarks. And I do look forward to any feedback or questions that you have at the end, as I'm still working through this CDA, which is in progress. Okay, so for those of you who are in VA as a provider or researcher, or those who have been affiliated with the VA, you may be fairly familiar with the community care programs. They've especially received a lot of attention as of late. However, VA's use of community services dates back as far as World War I, where they were leveraging outside care on a fee-for-service basis to offer services that weren't readily available within VA itself. And so community care is not necessarily a new program. However, in the last decade, there have been a lot of changes to the programming itself, with the intention of improving access to timely care for veterans. And so in this new era of community care, we've seen that there has been quite a bit of changes, especially to eligibility criteria, so that more veterans are able to access this service if it's needed. And so a couple of programs have rolled out during this time, the first of which was the Veterans Choice Program, which was enacted in about 2014. And these are just a couple of the notable changes to eligibility criteria, but you'll see that veterans may be eligible to receive outside care if the wait time for direct VA care was greater than 30 days or the distance was greater than 40 miles from their house to the nearest VA. While that program was being enacted, there were a lot of changes and tweaks that were done, and eventually it was replaced by the Veterans Community Care Program under Mission Act, which came out around 2018, 2019. And you can see highlighted here in red text some of the changes to the eligibility criteria again, most of which were actually lowering the access thresholds, meaning that even more veterans may be eligible under this new program. And so wait times for routine care went from 30 days to 20. And then drive time instead of distance is used more for that measurement of nearest VA, how accessible that is. And so for routine services, if you are farther than 30 minutes from the nearest VA, you may also be eligible for community care. And then another criteria that is newer is if the provider or the veteran and the veteran determine that it's in the veteran's best medical interest, that could be another reason for seeking community care. And so with all of these changes in the last decade or so, there's been a tremendous effort to just understand and evaluate not only the program, but its impact. And so over that time, it's really highlighted some of the successes that we're having with these programs at large, and also many of the challenges that comes with trying to coordinate across multiple different systems. And so, of course, for existing research that have again, evaluated these programs so far, we've seen some of the challenges as poor care communication breakdowns, and especially with the Veterans Choice Program when it first came out, adequacy of provider network was in question. But even in recent reports, we are starting to see that the program does come with a lot of good things as well. And so, of course, for veterans, there's the expanded care options where they can now get more comprehensive care both within and outside of VA. The other piece is that there is some research suggesting that it's improving VA wait times. And so at least by that standard, hopefully that's not a primary reason why veterans might be getting referred out into the community. And so for me, I got really interested when Mission Act was first being introduced for many different reasons. And it really sparked this idea for a CDA project where I'm really hoping to identify opportunities to maximize the alignment of VA and community care resources to improve mental health care access for veterans. And so for me, this vision comes from a couple of different places. So I just want to kind of walk you through a little bit of why I landed here in particular. And so for me, there's a couple of key drivers to this CDA vision. First and foremost, for those of you who maybe haven't applied for a career development award or may never apply for one, it's a very different type of grant. And part of what you are doing when you're applying is you're not just trying to come up with a research question that is meaningful, that can address important questions. You're also in many ways talking a lot about yourself and who you want to become as a researcher in the field. And so throughout the application process and even through my own continued involvement with my CDA, this has been a key point in my career where I really have grown passionate about and want to be sure that I'm improving mental health care access and equity. That is something that throughout my career, I really want that to be the focus of the majority of my work, and specifically for veterans. And so this comes from a couple of different, like I said, key foundational experiences for me, first of which is just the lived experience that I have. So I grew up in a very small rural community in northern Indiana. You can see our courthouse actually pictured here on the slide. And for me growing up in that community, I not only experienced what it was like to have limited access to different resources, but I also was able to develop this attitude that promotes the value of sharing these kind of pooled resources to support individual needs. And so for me, the best illustration of this is kind of witnessing my grandmother as she navigated her health challenges. And so my grandmother never learned to drive a car. She didn't own a vehicle. And in my town, for the time that I was there, we didn't have public transportation. There was no busing system, no trains, nothing really. You just either knew someone who had transportation or had to walk, bike, whatever, to get, you know, where you needed to get to. And so for my grandmother, she actually, you know, had a lot of different chronic illnesses that she was facing, including diabetes, COPD, congestive heart failure, high blood pressure. And so, you know, these not only required routine medical visits on an ongoing basis, but also specialty care visits. And unfortunately, in our town, while we had a hospital, which we were lucky to have, we didn't always have the specialty care she needed. So many of her appointments involved having to, you know, drive 30 plus minutes to other places like Fort Wayne, sometimes even having to go to Indianapolis, which was about an hour plus drive for us. And so this is could be very challenging for someone who doesn't have any means of transportation. But what I saw was that not only were family members willing and able to help, but I would see family, friends, neighbors, church members, school staff, just so many people within our community kind of step in to help our family whenever we had needs, whether they be basic needs or these more challenging health needs. And this wasn't just something I witnessed for my grandmother. This was also something I witnessed just in the community at large for a lot of different people. And so for me, this is what kind of drove me to really get inspired about the option to look at both community care and VA and how they work together, because I have seen it work in my own personal life. And so my lived experiences are what really inspired me to care a lot about access and making sure people have access to things when they need it. The other piece of it for me is my training as a psychologist. And so when I went to graduate school, I went to Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Illinois, which if you know anything about that, that's also positioned in a rural community. But I had the unique privilege of working under the mentorship of Dr. Holly Orcutt. And she had this NIU trauma study that was taking place at the time I enrolled that was very foundational to me in my growth as a trauma psychologist in particular. And so many of you may remember the Virginia Tech shooting that took place on campus in 2007. Others of you may or may not recognize the shooting that happened at NIU within a year of that on Valentine's Day in 2008. I personally had not heard of this until I interviewed at the school and then subsequently attended. But my advisor at the time, she was already collecting data on an interest of hers, which had to do with wanting to understand factors that impact sexual revictimization among college women, given that they're at increased risk for having those kinds of experiences in a college setting. And so she had just happened to be collecting a first wave of data for this longitudinal study when this unfortunate tragedy took place. And so she quickly made some shifts and saw this as an opportunity to make something meaningful out of this experience and shifted her research for that project in particular to better understand adjustment to an acute trauma experience. And even when I went in 2011, she was still collecting data on this population, so multiple waves of information. And so I bring this up because for me, I spent a lot of time with this data. I was able to read people's written accounts from the time, when this happened, able to look at their data both before and after. And some things that stood out to me were, even though many of the women had been exposed to this similar event, their reactions to it were very different. There were some that had more challenges thereafter for many years to come, others who seemed to recover after a period, and some that seemed to find growth within that experience. And so it just kind of piqued my interest in, well, why is it that people may be exposed to similar traumas and come out with different reactions? One thing that I learned in that, a notable lesson for me, was that for the women who had that history of sexual trauma, that tended to be something that was associated with a higher burden of illness in that particular study. And the more I looked in the literature, the more work I did, this seems to be something that comes up a lot. This particular experience is consistently associated with a high burden of illness. And so this is just an excerpt from a more recent article that's showing that is true across multiple countries. And so to me, this kind of piqued my interest in what is it specifically about sexual trauma that seems to be associated with more of these adverse outcomes. Now, as I continued to do my graduate training, got more clinical experience, another thing came out as really important in my learning, and that was that context plays a big role as well. And so the slide is a little misaligned. The X should be over the equal sign. But in starting to work with veterans in the VA during an externship, one thing that I repeatedly heard from veterans who had experienced military sexual trauma were that it's not the same thing, in their opinion, as civilian sexual trauma. And so, you know, they talked a lot about how the military culture, the organizational structures, the traditions, the values, how all those different cultural and environmental elements really had a striking influence on their reactions to sexual trauma that occurred in their military service. And so, again, this really shaped me to understand, one, trauma type matters, two, context really matters. And so this kind of drove me to want to continue working with MST survivors within the veteran population. And so as I continued my training in VA as both an intern and then a fellow, some other things started striking me about working with this population, and then just other experiences I've had over the years. And that's that survivors often feel silenced and alone in their suffering. And for me, this was just so striking in the sense of when clinically I worked with them, I would often hear people who would say, like, this is one of the only places that they feel they can be authentic or feel safe enough where they can kind of share what this experience has really meant to them, how it's really impacted them, and they didn't really have other places where they could have that kind of candid conversation. And so many times in our society, unfortunately, it's really hard to talk about sexual trauma at large. There's some other traumas where maybe you can talk to someone else and you might get understanding, but sexual trauma in particular has been tied with so many extreme beliefs and myths that are often very accusatory of survivors that cause them to question themselves. You know, was it my fault that this happened? Because, you know, a lot of impressions are, well, you went to that place, so somehow it's your fault, or you dressed that way and you should have known not to dress that way, or you should have been strong enough to fight back. And so many times they're questioning, like, was this my fault? Did I do something to cause this? Even though it's not, and they didn't. Even if they, by some chance, don't believe it's their fault, oftentimes they question if people will believe them, or how it makes them look to tell people they've had this experience. And so I know with veterans that I've worked with in particular, often they feel like if I say something, it's going to make me look weak, or as though I wasn't strong enough to defend myself. And so there's just so many complications that come with even just being able to share that you've had this experience that I think often makes survivors feel very disempowered. And so for me, I have this quote listed because when I read it the first time, I've just carried it with me in my heart. I'm just going to quickly read it. But if the therapist is able to listen, not only as an observer, but also as a listening partner, open to being affected by the narrative and emotions of the patient and therapist might experience a healing connection. And I feel like that's been very true. I've always tried to carve out space and make time to make sure that it's a safe environment, whether it be virtual or in person, for survivors to say what they need to say, however they need to say it, because they may have nowhere else to go where they can have that moment of authenticity. And over the years, I've seen what power that can give people just to be able to have that sacred time. And so that leads me to kind of the last point of what has driven this vision for my CDA and my career overall, which is I really want to have a career that empowers patients, especially those who may feel disempowered from their circumstances or even from the identities that they hold. And so my hope is that the work that I do long term has real world impact and leads to actions that can, if I can't make the change, that I can inspire others to make changes that ultimately ensure that veterans have the care that they need, how they need it, when they need it, where they need it. And so I'm really just looking to have my research be impactful, particularly in this way. And so that brings me to talking about the current part of my CDA that I wanted to share with everyone today. And so really this first part was looking at MST survivors' experiences with seeking mental health services through the VA's community care program. And so this particular study overall, my CDA is kind of looking at access as a whole. And so we are using this multidimensional access model by John Fortney and colleagues to really kind of help us to ask questions and get answers to those questions. And Dr. Fortney does happen to be one of my CDA mentors. So he's been really great in kind of guiding each aspect of this project to really look at it from either a patient or a systems perspective. And so in this first aim, we're really kind of focusing in on the part outlined in red with really wanting to understand from the patient perspective, you know, what's been the their perception of care access, their perceived need, and even not just characteristics of themselves, but the community or the system that are impacting their ability to get the care that they need. And so for this particular aim, we captured a purposive, purposive sample of veterans who screened positive for MST in their charts. And received a referral for community mental health care in the last 6 to 9 months. And we identified
Dr. Boykin, we just lost your audio. I'm not sure if you can hear me. I hope you can. But it seems like your headset must have died or become unattached somehow. Please stand by, attendees. I'm trying to get in touch with Dr. Boykin now, everybody. Please stand by. Heidi, have you noticed, have the slides changed? I've been focused on other things.
I don't think so.
Oh, it looks like she's gone. So she probably, something weird happened. And
I'm trying to call her.
Sure. She's probably trying to rejoin now. She may have actually lost internet. Thanks for standing by, everybody. We apologize for the technical difficulties. We'll get back to the presentation as soon as we can. You've heard Heidi and I are both working on it. Once again, everybody, thank you for standing by. We're trying to get in touch with Dr. Boykin, trying to get her reconnected. Thank you for your patience.
Her listed phone number is incorrect, and she is not responding to any of my messages.
I'm actually texting Dr. Say, Susie Say, to see if she has a personal number or a cell number or something. It's possible that she does. She's the director of this program. I wonder what happened. It looks like she probably, her computer died or lost internet or something tragic. Everybody, I've allowed attendees to send chats to me, the moderator. If you know the way, go ahead.
Dr. Boykin's computer lost internet. She's trying to log back on.
Wonderful. Thank you, Heidi. So we should be back in business pretty quickly. Heidi, if you're able to talk to her, she can certainly call in and I'll forward the slides for her.
Okay. Let me grab that number for her.
I can see Dr. Boykin is
Looks
now
like
joining again.
Perfect.
All right, can you hear me?
Sure can, yes. Let me make you the presenter.
Okay. Sorry, I lost internet for some reason in that moment.
Yeah.
Okay,
we're still on slide number 19 for you, and you're the presenter again.
Okay, perfect, perfect. And I apologize, everyone.
We can go a little bit late if we need to.
Okay, perfect. Well, so just reiterating what I was saying on slide 19, that we had a purposive sample of veterans who screened positive for MST in their charts, and then also veterans who had received a referral to community care for mental health services in the last 6 to 9 months from the time that we were pulling the information. And we identified these veterans through using the VA national databases. So the community care databases and the CDW as well. And this data was collected in calendar year 2023, so right at the outskirts of COVID. Okay, so the qualitative interviews themselves, they were audio recorded phone interviews. I conducted each of them, which was amazing. And they were about 45 minutes to 60 minutes in length. We transcribed them so that we could use that for analysis. In terms of the topics overall that were covered in the interview, so we were, I was asking questions around the experiences with an impact of seeking community care. For those who actually had the opportunity to attend a community care session, at least one, we asked additional questions around satisfaction with the perceived quality of those services. And then we asked everyone at the end just their preferences for MST related to care if they were to get that in a community-based setting. So today's results really focus in on this first part of the questions that we asked. Okay, and so we used a framework analysis, or are using framework analysis with the data. Okay, so just a little bit about our participant characteristics. So we were able to recruit 38 veterans, and you can see here that while it was still more women who participated, we did get were able to get a fair amount of men who also participated. About halfway through recruitment, we realized that we were not really getting any men that were agreeing to participate, so we changed our strategies a little bit and were able to get almost 50-50%, which is what we were looking for. For reality, we were trying to capture as close to 50% for both urban and rural. However, the majority of veterans that were even on our potential recruitment list were actually urban-based. And so I think this is just more representation of who was available based on who was being referred out into the community in this population. And then the last part I just want to point out is race, ethnicity. And so you can see that while the majority of the veterans who participated identified as non-Hispanic white, we did have a fair amount of representation from veterans who identified as Black or Hispanic, and even some that identified as Asian. Okay, so before I go over our kind of preliminary themes, I did want to pose these two questions for you all to be thinking through as I walk through the themes. These are questions that I would love to get your input on at the end if we have time and you have thoughts. But really, what are your reactions to these data as I present them? And then secondly, what do you see as the main takeaway message from these data? And so with that, I'll go ahead and share with you the four themes that we have right now or so far. So the first theme, again, tying back to our larger question, which is really around what is the emotional impact of this experience? And in analyzing the information, it really seemed to be this picture of the experience being very draining and provoking. And so I think that this particular quote nicely illustrates how many of the veterans felt when they were going through the process, which is, I was existing, not living. Many of them talked about how, you know, they try and they try and they are all for self-advocating, but even that, you know, got to be too much and exhausting to the point where they just gave up. And just it was just too emotionally draining to continue forward, or at least for them to put forth more effort. Another quote just kind of illustrates the same thing, but also pointing out how many of them just were already dealing with a lot of mental health concerns going into the process. And so for this particular veteran, them saying like, the wait time almost killed me. I deal with severe panic attacks, severe depression, manic depression, and suicide attempts. And so the delay was pretty excruciating. And so just again, highlighting just how emotionally taxing this process can be from the veteran perspective. Okay, this kind of covers the quote a little bit, but to summarize, when we were looking at the data, you know, of course, it wasn't just that the process was emotionally overwhelming. There were a lot of different things that impacted why it felt that way for many of the veterans. And so of the process issues that were highlighted, information gaps and communication breakdowns came up the most as leading them to feel these strong emotional reactions that they were having to the process. And so this quote, which you can sort of see the beginning, but in summary, really talks about how there was a veteran who had started with a therapist while she was in the military. And this outside therapist was covered by her military insurance at the time. And so her assumption and what she got some feedback on was that she should be able to continue seeing this person once she separated from the military. But once she was out, there was a lot of confusion around whether she could or couldn't see this provider, if this provider was actually covered or not. And so it just felt very confusing to her of like, well, what am I supposed to do? And not wanting to have that discontinuity of care that she had already established from years of working with this person while in the military. The other illustration of this is another situation where, again, many times people just wanted clarity around what was supposed to happen next, or when they were learning more information about what's happening next, there was a lot of multiple phone calls that were happening from different people and getting to the point where there was a lot of re-explaining that had to happen. And in this particular veteran's case, again, they ended up giving up because they kept having to talk to multiple people, both within VA and I think also within community care and insurance. And it was just, there was just no resolution that was coming fast enough. And so again, they got tired and just ultimately gave up trying in the process. Something else notable that came from the interviews is the impact that this has in terms of heightening risk for adverse outcomes. And so a couple of veterans kind of talked about it either from their personal experience or a concern they had for others who maybe are going through this process but don't have some kind of support while they're waiting. And so this particular veteran was talking about how during that time that they were waiting, their anxiety, their depression was just getting worse. And they couldn't wait any longer. So they went out and were fortunate enough to have other private insurance to be able to pursue care on their own. But they really felt like their health was declining in the process. Another veteran talked about the process of getting reauthorized for community care that she was already receiving once her number of sessions were completed. And just really talking about how, you know, it didn't feel great to be cut off cold turkey. From having someone that you're talking to really help you and get in a good mental space. And then once they stopped with this person for 6 months, they felt like they were having manic episodes again, and almost as if the progress they had made was pretty much being voided out. And so, you know, this came up in a couple of different ways and places, but there was a real concern from veterans about either the fact that they felt like their health was declining and getting worse to a point where it could increase risk, or that other veterans, if they don't have good support systems, could be put in that position if they have to deal with the process in a way that is not moving quickly enough for them. But I do want to say that not every veteran that I interviewed had a negative experience or something negative to say. There were a few, although the minority, who talked about having positive experiences. And when you look at kind of the common thread between those. Usually their comments were around that there was a timely response and or their everything that they were told in terms of their expectations were met. And so this particular veteran talked about how the VA had reached out to him. They told him what was going to happen, and then it did, and that went really well, and everything happened by the time it was supposed to happen. So there, it's not to say that everyone had difficulties. However, it does seem like the overwhelming majority had some challenges. Okay, so I just have some concluding remarks. Before again opening up back up to those questions, but really in this process, I think I set out with this CDA first imagining that, you know, I'm going to learn a lot of things that help me to improve the systems that are involved in community care and VA and their alignment. And so, you know, I went into this project thinking that, but after doing the interviews and spending a lot of time analyzing this information, what's really stood out to me is that it's just as important to pay attention to how each of these changes are affecting the patients and their overall experience in care. I think that that could have a lot of important implications for the type of care they choose in the future, if they're willing to seek VA or other care in the future. And my impression from a lot of the veterans were that they were coming kind of reluctantly to a point where they even were interested in getting mental health care, that things had just gotten to the point where they just felt like they could not handle it on their own, but prior to maybe tried to do everything within their power to stave off having to go get, especially mental health care services. And so, you know, people are kind of coming at a very sensitive, critical time. And if things aren't, you know, happening quick enough or not going as expected, that could really impact their future use or continued use of care services. And so it's just really highlighted for me the importance of paying attention to the patient experience. And even with the solutions we may come up with for how to better align VA and community care, making sure that we assess the impact of that on the patients that are going to be directly affected by those changes. And so at this point, again, thank you all for staying through the technical difficulties, and hopefully you were able to grasp most of what I was able to present here today. But I wanted to bring back these two questions that I brought up before, which are, what are your reactions to these data? Anything surprising, not surprising to you? And then what do you see as the main takeaway message or even implications of this? I welcome these comments at this point. Please put them in the Q&A if you have any. Mostly because this is still a work in progress. We're trying to finalize this data, but really I'm already thinking of, you know, what might be the next steps or where do we go from here? And so I would love any comments people are having at this point as you reflect on that data. And I'll pause for now in case there's anything coming up.
Once again, attendees, if you don't see the Q&A by default, which you probably do not, click in the ellipsis, the three dots in the far right bottom corner, and you'll see Q&A in a submenu there. If you click on that, it should open up in a panel, just like panelists or chat. And Dr. Boykin would like your response to these two questions, and that's where you would put any of your questions if you have them.
Yes.
Please do respond.
If you have thoughts, I think this would be helpful, and just our team continue to think about this and what this means for especially the future of community care as it extends in VA as well. So yeah, any reactions to these data, anything that you see as a main takeaway or something that you take away from this so far? Anything yet? It's okay if people are still.
No, I'm sorry. You should be able to open up the Q&A so that you see it. Oh,
okay.
Well. If you just go to the far right bottom corner, click on.
Oh yeah, let me do that.
You'll see that one just came in, and somebody made a couple of comments when we were having technical worries. Issues. But yeah, Emily Johnson just wrote in. Do you see that?
Yes, I do. So it seems like timeliness and responsiveness are critical to veterans experiencing mental health concerns. I agree with that, especially because I think, unlike, you know, other types of care they might receive, when I think about mental health and the stigma that can go along with that, it might be really hard for people to come forward and even want to receive those services. And then if you add additional time, it could also, I think, make it really discouraging. And for someone who's reluctant, you know, if we don't strike when the iron's hot, which is what I was always told, then, you know, we might lose that momentum with them. And then I see another comment of streamlining process is so important. Having a community care coordinator for patient-centered care is integral for successful outcomes. Also, as any VA provider, to follow through and do what we say, have that integrity. I completely agree. There were a few veterans in the interview that did point out that either having someone to check in or the fact that they did have someone to check in made the difference. And so I don't know that that's regularly happening. And the interviews themselves took place with veterans across the nation. So it wasn't just specific to one area. And so I think it just highlights that hopefully we're getting better about consistency and how we're implementing the programs, but also just making sure, again, that as the comment said, like, we're following through and making sure people don't fall between the cracks. So I appreciate that. All right. Well, of course, if you have other comments or questions, you know, I'm definitely open to those. And so I just want to take a moment to thank all of my CDA mentors who have been so gracious with their time and mentorship. Also want to thank people who have supported me in this qualitative work. And so, you know, just so grateful for everyone that's been behind this project thus far. I definitely want to say thank you to you all for coming. And again, bearing with all the technical issues that always seem to happen, and happy to answer any questions. And my email is here in case you think of something afterward that you have a question about.
Dr. Morgan, this one came in through the chat. This person must not have been able to find the Q&A, and I think they must be a CDA as well, because they say, I know that this is only part of your CDA. How does this research tie into the rest of your CDA, and what are your next steps?
That's a great question. So again, my larger vision is to, again, keep using the information that I'm learning to see what the opportunities are. I think it's easy to try to jump to solutions, but if we don't fully understand where issues may lie, it'll, you know, it could be a wasted effort. And so the rest of my CDA parts focus in on trying to better understand. So one, see what we can learn from the data that is currently collected from community care. So, you know, everyone who goes through community care, there's a record of that eventually that we can pull on the larger side of the VA data warehouse. And so kind of seeing what's there and how well we can evaluate what's happening with just that data alone. So looking for if there's any gaps in that. Also looking at it from the non-VA provider side. And so we're gearing up to start in surveying community providers themselves to get a sense of what are their training needs, what are their background, like what support might they need in this process as they also are seeking to care for veterans. And so in terms of the larger project, kind of looking at it from those different perspectives, the patient, the community providers, as well as the overall, you know, strategies that we have to evaluate the program in a more objective sense. And in terms of next steps, that's always the great question to think about. As you know, that's part of my next frontier is, how do I take this and move it into something more? And so I think right now we're still kind of chewing on what this information we have from the qualitative interviews. But ultimately, I hope to be able to start coming up with some creative solutions to some of the issues that we are currently seeing with community care. But at minimum, maybe potentially focusing a bit more on the patient experience side of things. So even if we're having a harder time trying to coordinate between these multiple systems. Are there other things we can do at the patient level to just make sure that they feel heard, recognized, and have support as they navigate the system? So I'm not sure what those will all look like, but kind of exploring that with the data that we have. So great question.
Well, we're not seeing any more answers to your question or questions for you coming in. Let me just say, attendees, when I close the webinar, eventually a short survey will pop up. If you think of anything that might be helpful to Dr. Boykin or that you forgot to ask, there's probably opportunity in that survey that will pop up. So please do take a few moments and provide answers to those questions. But since we're not seeing anything else, do you have any other closing comments you'd like to make, Dr. Boykin?
No, I thank you all for inviting me to do this. And, you know, I really hope that it's valuable to someone or someone takes something from it that can be helpful in your own work. So, yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you for your work in the VA, and thank you for preparing and presenting today. Like I said, attendees, a short survey will pop up. We definitely would appreciate it if you'd take a few moments and provide answers to those. And with that, I'll just go ahead and close. And thank you once again, Dr. Boykin.
All right.
And thanks, everybody, for sticking with us during technical difficulties. And thank you for coming back, Dr. Boykin.